Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. A top Burundian official is dismissing claims of a coup by a renegade general. Interior Minister Edouard Nduwimana tells VOA Central African Service that forces loyal to President Pierre Nkurunziza remain in control of the presidential palace, state radio and television, and the main airport in the capital, Bujumbura. He says the president is back in Burundi after traveling to Tanzania for a regional summit Wednesday, though he did not specify his location. Earlier, General Niyombare told private Burundian radio stations the president had been ousted and said he would form a committee to restore national harmony and unity. Authorities in Pakistan say gunmen ambushed a bus in Karachi Wednesday, killing at least 43 people. This includes women. The victims belong to the minority Shiite Ismaili Muslim community. Ayaz Ghul reports from Islamabad.
Police and witnesses say passengers thought the gunmen wanted to rob them and immediately offered all their belongings for sparing their lives. But the assailants ordered them to put their heads down and open fire. Hospital officials said more than a dozen women are among the dead, while several survivors are being treated for serious bullet injuries. Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif was chairing his conference when he was informed of the attack. He denounced the bloodshed, saying it is a worrying development that the terrorists are now targeting Pakistan's peaceful and innocent communities that have stayed away from controversies. Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Islamabad.
This is VOA News. U.S. President Barack Obama said Wednesday he would discuss with Saudi Arabia's visiting leaders how to build on a ceasefire in Yemen and praise the country for being a critical U.S. ally in the fight against Islamic State militants. The president made the comments before going into a closed-door meeting with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Nayef and Deputy Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia. The White House meeting comes ahead of a wider summit with a group of Gulf Arab countries. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says now is a critical moment for Russia and pro-Russia separatists to fulfill a peace deal meant to end violence in eastern Ukraine. Kerry made the comment in Turkey, where he met Wednesday with NATO foreign ministers. Kerry's comments follow meetings Tuesday with Russia's President Vladimir Putin and Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in the Russian resort city of Sochi. Kerry in Russia said there is no substitute for direct talks with key decision makers on complex global issues. Kerry's trip came at a time when relations between Washington and Moscow have plummeted to post-Cold War lows amid the disagreements over Ukraine and Syria. A search team Wednesday found the black box with key data from a passenger train that derailed in the northeastern city of Philadelphia as authorities continue to comb the twisted wreckage. At least six people were killed in the derailment Tuesday night of a seven-car Amtrak Northeast Regional train en route from Washington, D.C. to New York, with another 140 hospitalized, including at least six with critical injuries. Officials said an unknown number of the 243 passengers and crew aboard the train remain missing or unaccounted for, although some of them may have left the scene uninjured. There was no immediate explanation for the crash. The United Nations Security Council welcomed the start of a humanitarian ceasefire in Yemen and urged the warring sides to allow urgently needed food, medicine, and fuel to reach civilians. In a statement after the halt in fighting took effect Tuesday, the council also called for Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to hold a conference to broker a political solution to Yemen's crisis. South Korea's National Intelligence Service says North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and his defense minister had his defense minister executed for apparently falling asleep at a military event. An intelligence official said that Hyongyong Chol was shot to death by an anti-aircraft gun. There's been no public comment on the report from the North. And French President François Hollande, visiting Haiti Tuesday, pledged $145 million to help the former French colony schools recover from the earthquake 5 years ago that left much of the country in ruins. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
And welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Swuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Just tens of thousands of people in the streets of Bujumbura celebrating an apparent coup by a former commander of the armed forces here against President Pierre Nkurunziza.
That's Gabe Jaslow reporting from Burundi's capital, Bujumbura. Details coming up.
Also in the news, a new initiative has been launched to block UN peacekeepers from being granted immunity when accused of sexual exploitation and abuse.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Burundian soldiers appear to have overthrown President Pierre Nkurunziza while he was abroad to attend a regional summit on Burundi's political crisis. General Godfried Niyombare told private radio stations today that the president has been dismissed and that he will form a committee to restore national harmony and unity. The president's office says the coup attempt was foiled and that defense and security forces are searching for the perpetrators. Burundi has been rocked by protests since April 26, when President Nkurunziza announced he would run for a controversial third term. Clashes between police and protesters have killed at least 14 people and injured more than 200. VOA's Gabe Jaslow is in the capital, Bujumbura, and described the scene following the apparent coup.
Just tens of thousands of people in the streets of Bujumbura celebrating an apparent coup by a former commander of the armed forces here against President Pierre Nkurunziza, who has been the subject of just weeks of demonstrations against his plans to run for a third term in office, which protesters here say violates the Arusha Peace Accord that brought peace to this country about 15 years ago. So right now we are waiting to see whether this apparent coup from this one particular commander really represents the views of the entire armed forces or if it's just the views of one particular person. So it's really an uncertain situation right now, though if you were to walk through the streets of downtown Bujumbura, you would think of it as just a gigantic celebration. People really are declaring victory after many, many weeks of taking to the streets, clashing with police, and demonstrating against the president.
General Niyombare announced that the country's airports and all borders are closed. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urgently called on all parties to exercise calm and restraint. He reminded Burundian leaders of the need to preserve peace and stability in a country. Mr. Ban said Burundi has suffered so grievously from previous bouts of violence.
The attempted coup in Burundi is led by Major General Godfried Niyombare. What do we know about the general? Is he a well-established figure? Reporter William Eagle put those questions to longtime Burundi watcher Professor Philip Rentechen, a professor of law and politics at the University of Antwerp in Belgium.
Major General Godfried Niyombare, actually before this coup, had been chief of the, what they call in Burundi, the Service National de Renseignement, which is the National Intelligence Office. And he produced, in early February last, he produced a memo that actually leaked, that was not supposed to leak, of course, but that leaked, and where he argued over 10, 15 pages, where he argued that President Nkurunziza should not be a candidate for a third term. He argued why that should not be the case. And this was, of course, very well received at the president's office, and Niyombare was immediately sacked from office. And since then, speaking end of February this year, he had no particular position in the army. Before he became chief of the SNR, he was Burundi's ambassador to Kenya, so he knows something about the regional community as well. And he is, important to say, in the Burundian context, he is a Hutu, so the same ethnic group as President Nkurunziza, or perhaps I should say former President Nkurunziza. And he actually is from the same movement, and he was part of the rebel force. which was led by President Nkurunziza. So in that sense, he's a good face for the putsch.
So we cannot say at this point, to fall into old stereotypes, that this is evidence of domestic Hutu-Tutsi tension. In fact, as you're saying, the main actors involved in this situation are both Hutu.
Yes, both the opponents, if you want now, are both Hutu, but what we've also seen is that there were Hutu and Tutsi pro-Nkurunziza and Hutu and Tutsi anti-Nkurunziza. It is important because that is indeed a stereotype about Burundi. Burundi has managed its ethnic divide quite successfully over the last 10, 15 years. And the problem that has started in, say, a couple of months ago in Burundi was really a political problem. It was not an ethnic problem at all. It was about power, and the main parties that entered into confrontation and that would have entered into confrontation during the elections would both be CNDD-FDD on the one hand, FNL on the other hand, would be both parties that many people would consider as at least dominated by Hutu. So the strife is not between ethnic groups, it is between political forces.
That was Professor Philip Rentschens of the University of Antwerp. He was speaking with reporter William Eagle.
Well, in the past 3 weeks, more than 50,000 Burundians have poured across its borders into neighboring countries to flee political chaos and violent clashes in the capital, Bujumbura. Many fled eastward into Tanzania, where the UN Refugee Agency has set up camps. UNHCR's Tanzania representative Joyce Menz-Cole described the refugees from Burundi today to VOA's David Arnold.
Today, the numbers are a little bit difficult to confirm, but I think I can safely say that we have probably 30,000 in a place called Kagunga, most likely, and another 10,000 right on the border trying to get into Kagunga, and another 15,000 in Nyarugusu camp, which is the one remaining refugee camp in Tanzania to which we are taking all refugees.
How many camps are they going to along the border?
Tanzania only just recently reconfirmed, I can say, the granting of citizenship to almost 200,000 Burundians. And we've just engaged in a citizenship certificate distribution, which the first phase ended at the end of April. And now, then we had just probably around another 8,000 who remained as refugees, partly as a result of the repatriation at the end of 2012 of almost 35,000 back to Burundi. So the situation has changed very dramatically just in the last few weeks, as I said, in that we now see an influx. Many of those same people who were able to repatriate to Burundi have now fled, either because they witnessed violence themselves or because they unfortunately have witnessed violence before and it caused them to flee at that time, and therefore they took preemptive measures to save their lives.
And what are the refugees telling your people on the border now as they cross into Tanzania?
Many of them are saying that they realized that when they fled before, that the people who saved their lives were able to do so by leaving early. That is quite a large number. But then we have people who were either specifically attacked or intimidated or harassed or had witnessed sort of attacks or intimidation or harassment of friends. There was one, which is not typical necessarily, who came all the way from Bujumbura, the capital of Burundi, who said that he is a barber and he just had to flee because I think at least two of his friends were two of those who have been killed in the very, very unfortunate situation there in Bujumbura.
What kind of services are being provided and do you have any difficulty delivering them?
One of the main difficulties that we have is that the place where these persons have fled into is a sort of village, but it is surrounded by sort of very difficult terrain with hills, and then on the other side it is it abuts Lake Tanganyika, and we are not able to take them off this place except for by boat, because the other way that, you know, we would have to return them into Burundian territory, which obviously we cannot do, before we could return into Tanzanian territory. We have one boat at the moment, which is 100 years old. It's kind of a famous boat that apparently inspired a movie called The African Queen, and it's still in service. We are only able to place about 600 persons on that boat at a time, and it takes 3 hours to go to this place and then another 3 hours to return. The Liemba is costing us $10,500 for each return trip. We are looking for another boat, and I hope to be able to hire one today, but we want to ensure that this second boat is actually seaworthy to carry passengers. I would not want to have a mini Mediterranean situation here in Tanzania.
That's UNHCR's Tanzania representative, Joyce Menz-Cole. She spoke to VOA's David Arnold. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. A Burundian general says he has ousted President Pierre Nkurunziza, who is out of the country for a regional summit. And 50,000 Burundians have poured across borders into neighboring countries to flee political chaos and violent clashes in the capital, Bujumbura. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
A new initiative has been launched to block UN peacekeepers from being granted immunity when accused of sexual exploitation and abuse. At least 50 such alleged incidents occurred last year, but Code Blue campaign supporters say the actual number is probably much higher. VOA's Joe DiCapua has the story.
The UN has admitted that sexual abuse by peacekeepers is a problem, and that it has a zero-tolerance policy toward it. But Paula Donovan, co-director of AIDS Free World, says that policy is not enough.
Both by the UN's own accounts and by anecdotal accounts and information coming from the field and from people within the UN system who don't feel at liberty to speak publicly, we know that the problem is actually much more severe than the UN is reporting to the General Assembly.
Donovan says UN claims are not backed by the evidence.
Each year, the Secretary General reports on the numbers of allegations of sexual exploitation and abuse and claims that the problem is slowly but surely being solved. In fact, our research shows that that's not the case at all, that the problem is quite extensive, that the UN does not report in the most accurate or transparent ways about the problems that come to their attention.
AIDS Free World is joined in the Code Blue campaign by Grasa Michel, who led a 1996 study of sexual exploitation of children in armed conflict. Retired Lieutenant General Romeo Dallaire, who commanded the UN mission during the Rwanda genocide. African Women's Development Fund CEO Theo Sowa, and former UN Undersecretary General Anwarul Chowdhury. Donovan says justice is not being served when the UN investigates sex abuse allegations against peacekeepers.
We decided to try to determine where the breakdown starts, and what we learned was that it's a chain reaction that actually stems from the fact that under a 1946 convention, UN staff, police, and experts on mission and peacekeeping missions have immunity. So we're calling for the end to what we are perceiving as a misinterpretation of a very old convention.
She says immunity was originally meant for diplomats, but is now being applied to accused criminals.
So we will also be calling for a complete and thorough commission of inquiry, independent entirely of the United Nations, that will look at what's broken within the system and not only how it needs to be fixed, but who is responsible and who needs to be held to account for the dreadful way that these cases are handled, covered up, and misrepresented to the public.
Naming the campaign Code Blue, she says, is not just because the UN operates under a blue flag.
In the United States and some other countries, when all efforts have failed to keep a patient alive and the patient is going into cardiac arrest in a hospital, an announcement is made throughout the hospital, Code Blue in room such and such, and all who can help to keep the patient alive rush to the scene and help to resuscitate the patient who's near death. So we feel as though we're at that point with the United Nations.
The Code Blue campaign calls for amending the 1946 Convention on the Privileges and Immunities of the United Nations. It says the convention should exclude sex-related crimes from the immunity granted to UN personnel. Another option, says Donovan, is to have the Secretary General issue a policy bulletin of the convention that reflects today's realities.
That immunity should never have been in place or applied where these particular accusations are concerned. And you have the double standard here. You can't say you have zero tolerance for sexual exploitation and abuse, but you're tolerant enough to have the presumption of immunity when someone is accused.
Campaign organizers deny the effort will harm UN operations. They say it will strengthen the reputation and credibility of a critical UN function. Accusations of sexual abuse have been leveled against French and African peacekeepers in Central African Republic after an internal UN report was leaked in April. The United States has called for an inquiry into how the UN dealt with the allegations. The report says alleged abuses against children occurred between December 2013 and June of 2014. U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Samantha Powers, says if the allegations are true, it would be a profound violation of the dignity and physical security of individuals in their most vulnerable state. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
As Joe mentioned in his report, one of the main supporters of the Code Blue campaign is retired Lieutenant General Romeo Dallaire. He commanded the UN mission in Rwanda during the genocide. From New York, he explained to Joe DiCapua why he's supporting the campaign.
The system by which we are holding people accountable has not been responding to the volume nor the scale of these actions that are undermining these missions. And if you're sending missions to protect people and to assist them in working their way through the difficult situations of conflict or post-conflict and the vulnerable populations, of which many are women and children, at risk, the last thing you want is people preying on them. And so I considered that anyone that goes into a mission area should never consider that there's anything like consenting adults. There shouldn't even be fraternization. And any actions of this nature must be taken most seriously and seen to be acted upon, which is not what the reports that we've been getting and reading from the UN.
So as a general, I'm sure you've issued such orders, but are those orders difficult to enforce?
That all depends on your leadership. And that depends on the attitude, and that depends on the will of the leadership to take action, but it also depends on the established structures. If the investigations of such things are taken out of the hand of the chain of command in the field, because as it currently is, whenever such allegations are launched, it comes right out of New York, the Office of Internal Oversight Services, and their sort of conduct and discipline teams in the field, they run the investigation. So it's outside of the purview of those who are actually commanding the troops or responsible for those people. And when you do that, then you tend to lose the credibility vis-a-vis not only your own people, but the people that you're serving. And so I think that is a major, major failing of not giving enough power to those in the field to take the appropriate actions.
Now, the Code Blue campaign is calling for an amendment to the 1946 Convention dealing with immunity, or possibly a policy bulletin from the Secretary General to, quote, reflect today's realities. Are those the quickest ways of getting a change?
The reports that have been happening over the last nearly 12 years And the impact of that in the field is of such a nature that unless we fight this atmosphere or near culture of impunity, a near culture of silence, of non-reporting, with some draconian action, we don't think there'll be significant change to the extent that we'll get rid of this horrific means that is undermining the raison d'etre of these missions in the first place.
Now, we're talking about very often crimes against children here. So it would seem that orders alone would not affect the issue, and even amending the convention would not directly affect the issue. We're talking about particular individuals who are predators. So is there any way to deal with those peacekeepers themselves, those who join the military?
Well, remember that we're talking two groups. We're talking about the non-military group, and the statistics, as poor as they are reflecting that when you look at the ensemble of all that, there are more cases there than there are on the military side. And so the military obviously are easier to sort of identify and the like, but it is both military and non-military. And so selection, yes, is a requirement. Training, but training in changing attitudes and ensuring that an attitude of impunity cannot exist in an organization where such crimes or even such indiscipline is permitted. I mean, we're talking about crimes of rape and so on, but we're also talking about things like sexual harassment and the like. There's all kinds of policies, but the follow-through often in these cases, the discipline-wise, is very weak. And so giving the chain of command more authority on the ground, more investigative power on the ground to be timely, and then an ability from the field to go, as an example, on the military side, to troop-contributing nations and holding them accountable directly, to me, is far more effective than having to send everything to New York, have them go through all their processes, and then go to the nation and then try to find out what the nation is doing. And often it takes so long that the whole exercise is moot.
That's retired Lieutenant General Romeo Dallaire from New York. He spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, political satire from the African diaspora, poking fun at political and religious figures and symbols can make you laugh, but it can also stir up a great deal of controversy. Straight Talk Africa comes to you on Wednesday at 18:30 UTC. Join the discussion. That's next time on VOA Africa.
VOA. Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
It's a subject you might not want to talk about. HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. Infection with the virus continues to rise among Africans, particularly the young. But you can take steps to prevent the spread of the disease. If you are sexually active, use a condom every time you have sex. Talk to your local healthcare worker about getting an HIV test. If you are HIV positive, talk to them about what therapies are available.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.